Welcome to a special edition of Museum Chat Live. Our community is filled with diverse stories, and we recognize that our story begins with the indigenous peoples of this land. We acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on lands that have been inhabited by indigenous peoples for millennia, and we would like to honor the centuries of indigenous peoples who walked on Turtle Island before us. Well, it's 2024. With years behind us since we wrapped up the virtual museum lecture series, we've been able to share about half of the lectures with our wider audiences. We are thrilled to bring the rest of our hit lecture series to the podcast so that more of you can enjoy these fascinating stories and join in on the historical adventures. Of course, you can always catch the original lecture over on our YouTube channel. If you enjoy the lectures, our podcasts, and our programs, why not consider making a donation to the museum? Your donations help us to continue to provide the high quality and enjoyable programming that you have come to expect from us. We really appreciate any donation you're able to make. Visit our website, stcatharinesmuseum.ca, or give us a call at 905-984-8880 to make a donation. Your donation makes a difference. On today's episode of VMLS Via Podcast, we're sharing a lecture titled From Anitevka to St. Catharines, The Early Years of the Spiritual Home of the Jewish Community. It was presented by special guest Howard Slepkov. This lecture was originally recorded on March 1st, 2022. Enjoy the lecture.
So I want to thank Adrian and the staff at the St. Catharines Museum for inviting me to make this presentation this evening on the history of the Jewish community in St. Catharines. I've had a long association with the museum, and believe it or not too many years ago, we had an exhibition that was in several of the showcases as you walked into the museum about the history and the involvement of the Jewish community and our synagogue, B'nai Israel, in St. Catharines. So I'm really, really pleased to be able to share a little bit of my knowledge about the Jewish community and how we actually ended up here. So to begin with, I need to point out that I am going to give you a bit of a history lecture at the beginning, because in order to understand how we got here, you have to understand what it meant for the Jewish people to come to a community and to establish a synagogue. And on the screen in front of you, you see our synagogue, which is at the corner of Church and Calvin Street. And I'll explain to you how it ended up there shortly. So bear with me as I take you on a little bit of a deep dive 2,500 years ago. So for those of you that don't know, the Jewish people began their history with a man called Abraham, who you see on the screen in front of you, and who came to the realization that despite what he had been brought up to believe, there was one true God. There was one deity who had power over all the other gods because the other gods didn't exist. And he rebelled against the beliefs of his society and his family, and he smashed all the gods in the community where he was raised, which was in the depths of Mesopotamia between the Tigris and the Euphrates River. Abraham begat, well, first of all, he married Sarah, then he begat Isaac. Isaac married Rebekah, and they begot Jacob and Esau. And Jacob, of course, had 12 sons, one of whom was Joseph. And almost everybody who's listening tonight will know that Joseph was given a favorite position in his family of 12 brothers and one sister. And the 12 brothers resented his position of favoritism with his father, and they sold him into slavery in Egypt. The sages teach that Joseph had to be in slavery in Egypt in order to make the rest of Jewish history come to reality. So what you see in front of you is the revelation of Joseph to his brothers who had come to Egypt because they needed food. There were always famines in the Middle East. And at this particular juncture, they came to Egypt, not knowing that their brother Joseph was now second in command to Pharaoh. They all found what they needed, and Joseph encouraged his brothers to bring their father and to settle in the land of Goshen in Egypt. And 400 years after the events you see on the image in front of you, Joseph had died, and Moses had realized that his people were in slavery, and he begged Pharaoh to let the children of Israel go. And of course, most of you know that what you're looking at is the parting of the Red Sea. So up until this point, the Bible has been the story of a Jewish family. Grandfather, son, grandson. But when Moses escorted the children of Israel across the Sea of Reeds to freedom, the Jewish people became a nation. We were given the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, and the Ten Commandments became the foundation of what evolved into the Jewish religion. Because before, the belief in God only meant certain things. And after Moses, that meant the children of Israel, now the nation of Israel, had accepted the covenant to be a light unto the other nations, to pursue justice, and to treat each other with respect, and the world with respect, and everything about their life was to be approaching holiness. So all of our story till now has been written in the five books of Moses, which is the Torah, which you see in front of you. We read through the Torah, the entire five books of Moses, every year from beginning to end. We read the story of creation all the way through to the death of Moses before Joshua led the children of Israel into the Holy Land, which they had been promised by Hashem, God, Adonai, Yahweh, however you want to think of him. As soon as we had been given the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, God told Moses and the children of Israel that they were to bring their riches and create a mishkan, a tabernacle in which they would house the stones on which the Ten Commandments were written, and in which the Spirit of God would reside among the children of Israel. In the five books of Moses, we read about the positions of all the tribes around the outside of the temple. Because the temple was supposed to be the home of Hashem, Adonai, Yahweh, in the lives of the Jewish people. Of course, the foundation of the Jewish religion was the sacrificial rite. Sacrifices were the meat and potatoes, if you will, of what daily life in the Jewish world was in biblical times. Sacrifices for sin, sacrifices for thankfulness, and so on. And the sacrifices took place at the first temple in Jerusalem built by Solomon, and the second temple after the expulsion to Babylonia. And from 536 BCE until 70 AD, the world of the Jewish people evolved around the temple in Jerusalem. And the Wailing Wall, which you read about and hear about and see so often, is the only remnant above ground of that temple. Although the temple was in Jerusalem and the Jewish people were commanded to come to Jerusalem three times a year for the census and to observe the festivals, and it was in order to observe the Passover that Jesus of Nazareth went to Jerusalem on Ash Wednesday and Palm Sunday, rather. But there were a lot of farmers who lived at a considerable distance from Jerusalem. And so synagogues were built all over the area of what was, in those days, the area of Israel. And there have been considerable excavations of those. The image you see in front of you is at Capernaum on the shores of the Kinneret, the Galilee. Sadly, in 70 AD, the Romans, because they wanted to control the Middle East and their empire was expanding, they burned Jerusalem to the ground. They expelled the Jewish people. Up until that time, Judaism had been focused on the temple and the sacrificial rite, which was attended to by the Kohanim, the high priests, and the Levites, who were responsible for supporting the work of the Kohanim. Because the temple was destroyed and the Jewish people were expelled, the Jewish people had to come up with a way to replace sacrifice. And the sages created a Sanhedrin, a court of 70 sages who argued how to take the words of the Torah and create a living Judaism. And what they came up with, not all at once, but over a period of several centuries, was that Judaism and our practices was to rest on three pillars. One was on the Torah and the study of the history of the Jewish people and what that meant for the people. Another was to worship of God. And worship took the place of the sacrifices. The sages were brilliant. They figured out how to enable the Jewish people to stay together and practice their faith without the sacrifices. So we turned to prayer three times a day. And the third pillar on which the Jewish world rested was on acts of loving kindness, which we could perform for one another in our world. So after the expulsion from Jerusalem and the destruction of the Second Temple, the Jewish people wandered all over what was then considered the known world. You can see the map of Europe. I apologize, it's not that clear. But the Jewish people ended up all over Europe, all over North Africa, and far into Asia. And wherever they went, They built synagogues. They followed the precepts of their faith. Prayer, the study of the Torah, and acts of loving kindness. And those acts of loving kindness were performed in a community. There had to be a community. So wherever the Jewish people went, they built synagogues for prayer, and they formed community. Of course, over the next 1800 years, the Jewish people found themselves all over. In Eastern Europe, especially, which was dominated by Russia, which of course is now attempting to regain its former glory. But the Jewish people lived in the Pale of Settlement, which included Poland and Lithuania and Latvia and Ukraine and all of the Baltic states and into the Balkan Peninsula. Wherever they found themselves, they kept themselves together because they needed a community. They needed a community to pray. They needed a community to bury their dead. They needed a community to study the Torah. And wherever they went, there were synagogues. However, because of the changes in the world at the end of the 18th and through the 19th century, the evolution of technology and transportation and education meant that over time, the Jewish people were persecuted because they didn't fit in with the Christian world where they lived. As long as they were left alone, that was fine. But whenever there is change in the world, there is instability, and the Jewish people have always found themselves caught in the middle. The picture you see in front of you is what was left after a pogrom in Eastern Europe. They occurred most frequently in the Pale of Settlement, which was in the wider western part of the Russian Empire. And because of the persecution and because of the ability to move from the east of Europe to the west of Europe, the Jewish people began to move around. First, they went to Germany and Holland and England because that's where the trains were built to take them. But then very quickly, they went to ports in the Baltic and on the North Sea and on the Atlantic coast, and they went to North America. By that time, there was postal service, and people learned about the freedoms of the New World. And over 2 million Jews from Eastern Europe moved to the United States. 150,000 went to Canada. Lots went to South Africa and into Africa. And where they went was very much a function of where they thought they could make a new life for themselves. They followed where development went. So as the European nations moved into Africa and Australia and New Zealand and Southeast Asia and into South America and so on, the Jews followed because they were looking for a way to make life better for themselves. Hundreds of thousands of them ended up in the Lower East Side in New York, and thousands of them ended up in Kensington in Toronto. But in both New York and in Toronto, there was never enough to absorb everybody. Not everybody could find work. And even though they had come to the New World, there was still persecution and lack of respect. A book by the name of Roads Taken, written by Hasia R. Diner, documents how the wandering peddlers helped the Jewish people find their way across North America. The peddlers went from one city to another, and wherever they found themselves good living, an ability to support themselves, they started a community. And once again, wherever they found themselves, they created a synagogue and a Jewish community, because in order to live according to the precepts of our faith, they needed 10 men to pray certain prayers. They needed to be able to bury their dead. They needed kosher meat, because even into the 20th century, the new immigrants who came from Europe were observing the customs of our faith that kept them together as a people over the centuries. Remember, now we're talking about 2,500 years. So the Jews in Toronto, who ended up in Toronto, actually began in Montreal or in Halifax, or like my grandfather, in places like Philadelphia. And they went wherever they had family. My grandfather came to Toronto because he had an uncle and an aunt who moved from Philadelphia to Toronto in pursuit of a living. My grandmother in St. Catharines ended up here in Toronto because her father had ended up in Toronto and started a business. And so they were in Toronto, but then my grandfather decided, because it still wasn't easy to make a living, he decided he would move to St. Catharines. Now, why did the Jews in Toronto and Buffalo, how did they end up in St. Catharines? Why did they choose St. Catharines? At the turn of the century, St. Catharines was a booming community. They were able to make, in the words of our Yiddish language, the Eastern Europeans, they were able to make a geschäfte. They were able to make a business, support themselves and support their families. There was the Shikluna shipbuilding. There was the Wellenship Canal. And at the turn of the century, into the 20th century, St. Catharines was the home of the first automobile that was built in Canada. Of course, the United States and Detroit and other places had their own centers, but Canada had the Rio, and the Rio was built in St. Catharines. And because it was a very fertile farming area, it was a market community. So there was the beginning of the chance for a good living and to support family. And the first peddlers that came to St. Catharines, this is more or less what they found. That's St. Catharines looking down towards what is now where the Performing Arts Center is, and on the left-hand side at one time was Eaton's, and on the other corner was the Woolworth Building, and so on. And slowly but surely, between the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the First World War, more and more Jews came to St. Catharines. They were peddlers first, but they found places to live. That's Queenston Street. They found places to live, and they found the ability to make a living. One of the first to stay here was Richard Nadel. He was in Yiddish, he was Rachmiel Nadel. He came to Hamilton, and then from Hamilton, he came to St. Catharines. One of his daughters married Morris Morris, who was another itinerant peddler who went into the scrap building, the scrap business, and started a family in St. Catharines. Rachmiel Nadel was the impetus behind the beginning of the organized Jewish community. We need 10 people in order to read the Torah and in order to say certain prayers. And in order to pray 3 times a day and say those prayers, you need a community. That's how it's defined in our tradition. So Rachmiel Nadel had a son who was 12, and he didn't want to have to go to Hamilton for his son to be trained for his bar mitzvah, which is the confirmation, if you will, of a boy when he's 13. So he decided there needed to be an organized Jewish community in St. Catharines. So he and a group of other, at that time, families living at the along the St. Paul Street area into Queenston Street, they formed Congregation B'nai Israel. They didn't call it Congregation B'nai Israel at first. They called it B'nai Israel. There was no congregation. It was just B'nai Israel in 1902, just in time for Rachmiel Nadel's son's bar mitzvah. In 1902, the Jewish community that was here went looking for somebody who could lead services for our high holy days, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and somebody who could teach others to lead services. They happened to know that somebody, and again, it would have been somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who contacted Jacob Cooperman, who was married to someone from Boston, a second wife, and he was in Buffalo and he was looking for work. And someone invited him to come to St. Catharines in 1902 or 1904 to lead services. He came here, he brought his family of 5 children, his second wife, who he had 2 more children with, including, for those of you who are historians, Bernie Cooperman, B.I. Cooperman, who was the impetus behind the St. Catharines Public Library downtown. That was his project at the end of his working life. But Jacob Cooperman came and settled, and he helped to create the Jewish community. Along came another important immigrant to St. Catharines, who came to St. Catharines because his wife was the daughter of another by now prominent merchant in St. Catharines. That's Ralph Jacob Hoffman. And when he came to St. Catharines, he was a young man with a wife, and he raised 5 children, but he was a go-getter. He was the impetus behind what was to become the synagogue for St. Catharines. So before the synagogue took off, the Jewish community met in homes of people who were Jewish living in St. Catharines, the Zalavinskys, the Morrises, the Hoffmans, the Coopermans. That's where they met to pray. But the community was growing and nobody had a home big enough. So one of the merchants, a freedman, who I think was a forerunner of the freedmen that ended up living in St. Catharines and staying in St. Catharines, he died and left the community a building which they were able to sell. And they bought Oh, sorry. I'm going to go forward one more and then I'll come back. He bought a house, a piece of property on the corner of Church and Calvin Street. The only problem was that in order to buy the house that was going to be the synagogue, Jacob Kuberman had to get a non-Jewish friend who bought the land because nobody would sell to the Jewish community. Jacob Kuberman by this time was a fairly prominent businessman with many contacts. He asked a friend to buy the land for them, and they bought the land at the corner of Church and Calvin Street. Now I need to try to be able to go back. By this time, the three that I've talked about was joined by Abraham Newman. For those of you that have a little bit of background in St. Catharines, Abraham Newman was the founder of Newman Steel. His son Benny, his grandson Mark, and so on. Abe Newman, to give you an idea of how some people came to St. Catharines, Abe Newman had an uncle and aunt living in St. Catharines by this time. He was in Europe, and he had decided he was going to be a cattle baron in Texas. He managed to make his way to North America, to Toronto, and on his way to Texas, he stopped in St. Catharines to visit his aunt and uncle. And of course, he never left because there was a business for him to get involved with. And the Newman name forever. Now, that's not Newman Construction, that's Newman Steel. Newman Steel, Abe Newman and his family played a huge role in the development of the Jewish community. To give you an idea of just how big the community was by that time, that's Jacob Kuberman at the head of that parade. And across from him, I believe, is Lil Zelovinsky. And those are all the girls that were in St. Catharines. So that represents a substantial number of families. That parade, I'm going to assume, was at the end of the First World War. There was no development in St. Catharines during the period of the First World War. Some families came here because the Canadian government was going to build the canal or build a new version of the canal, and they knew that there was going to be work. But then that work stopped in order to fight the First World War. But as soon as the war was over, the community took off again. So much so that they decided that that house was no longer big enough for them. They needed a larger building for the synagogue. So by this time, the 35 families, 35, think about it. The 35 families decided to build a synagogue on the corner of Church and Calvin Street. The first thing they did was they moved the house down Calvin Street. You see the house here and the synagogue is there. They dug a subfloor, a basement, and they moved that house back, and then they went to a local architect who designed the building for the synagogue. In 1923, they made the decision to build the synagogue. They moved the house back. They went to the architect, and in 1924, they laid the cornerstone for the building of the synagogue. That's R.J. Hoffman and his wife Eva Andrews in the front on the right-hand side, and that's Abe Newman behind him, and then all the families that were around in the community, around them. That's the lane of the cornerstone. In 1925, they moved into the synagogue. in time for the high holidays, which in our calendar, our Hebrew calendar, begins actually with the high holy days in the fall, in September. So in late August, they moved into the synagogue, but that was only after the women in the community, some of whom you see there at the armories, raised the money to build what we call the Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark. The way you see it in the picture there is after it was moved back. Originally, that dais and the Holy Ark was immediately under the Star of David, and the congregation sat around the outside. But the women raised the money to have that Aron HaKodesh, the Holy Ark, to hold the Torah scrolls engraved and carved and everything. There you see the way the synagogue was at the end of the Second World War. The Canadian government, I learned in doing the research for my book, put money on the table for recognition on the part of the communities in Canada of those who had served in the war. And every one of the servicemen that came from our community received a ring, a Star of David, a gold ring with a Star of David on it. And then they were presented with that. That is the ceremony at which time they received the Star of David. This is my grandfather Morris on the side there. And just off to the edge here is where my grandmother and my aunt was. And of course, my father is in the back there. And my eyes are failing and the picture is cloudy, so I'm not even going to try to identify. But that's all of the men. The St. Catharines Jewish community gave a tremendous amount to the war effort. In fact, two of our members actually died overseas, and several of them moved to Israel to fight the War of Independence. But this is the dais, this is where the Torah was read from. And after the war, everything was moved back and against the wall. In 1954, the community was growing by leaps and bounds. After the war years, the Canadian government, the economy took off. And there were all kinds of new jobs, the car industry, the chemicals industry, the steel industry. And there were so many new families moving into St. Catharines. And in all the communities in North America, not just in St. Catharines, from one community to the next, they were building Jewish community centers. Not just a place to worship and to entertain, but a place where their children could be educated and where there could be activities to keep the community together. This Jewish Community Center was opened in 1954. You see the date there, September 28th or something. It's fuzzy. It was a great building. We called it the center from the day it opened. Our Hebrew school was there. And before that, our Hebrew school was in the old synagogue for years. After the synagogue was built in 1925 and opened, the old synagogue became where the rabbi lived and where the classes were held. But this became the Newman Memorial Building, because the Newman family, the Abe Newman family, gave the steel for the erection of the structure in the name of Benny Newman's mother and father, who had died as the building was going up. So it became known as the Newman Memorial Building. Today, we just refer to it as the Jewish Community Center. And that brings me to the end of my presentation, because my goal and what I was charged with was to explain to you how the Jewish community came to be in St. Catharines. It came to be here because our faith, represented here by the synagogue, has its roots in the past and its future in the shoots that came from the synagogue. We say in every service, we sing Midor Lador, from generation to generation. For 2,500 years, the synagogue and our faith has kept us together and kept us highly identified against all of the things that the world brought to our fore. And so my book, I call it A Future in Doubt, because the world is changing far faster than we are able to adapt. And the question is whether or not we will have a Jewish community in the future, because our kids don't want to live in a small town. Our kids like the big cities. And without kids to support it, we can't continue as we have. But I'm here to say we're going to work awfully hard to make sure that happens. And so thank you very much for listening to me. I hope it's not been too boring. And I hope I've explained how it came to be that 33 families created a synagogue that at its highest capacity can hold 330 people. They sure had a vision for the future.
Hi, it's Adrian again. We really hope you enjoyed the lecture. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us via our social media channels or at museum@stcatharines.ca. If you enjoy the lectures, our podcasts, and our programs, why not consider making a donation to the museum? Your donations help us to continue to provide the high quality and enjoyable programming that you have come to expect from us. We really appreciate any donation you're able to make. Visit our website, stcatharinesmuseum.ca, or give us a call at 905-984-8880 to make a donation. Your donation makes a difference. Don't forget to subscribe to our social media channels, blog, and our podcasts so you don't miss any of the historical fun. More information is available on our website, stcatharinesmuseum.ca. Next time on VMLS via podcast, return to Civvy Street, post-war St. Catharines. Thanks for listening. The Virtual Museum Lecture Series is presented by the St. Catharines Museum and Welland Canal Center.